Welcome back, everyone. It is the third episode of the Orlando Overtime Podcast, and I am so excited to be back here recording this podcast for you. I want to first start off the episode here by apologizing to all of the listeners for being gone for so long. I've had a busy past couple of months with both of my jobs and everything. I'm going to try to get back and record these podcasts as frequently and often as I can, but very excited to be back and doing this one for y'all and have a lot to talk about. It's been a while since I did the last podcast, and a lot has happened in Orlando sports since then, so a lot to go over. I'm going to go ahead and jump right into it, though. We're going to talk a lot about UCF and them going undefeated the past 2 years. We have a conference championship game coming up on Saturday, December the 1st, which is today as I'm recording this right now, and as hopefully a lot of you will hear it, or in the past possibly, but today coming up. We have the Orlando Magic playing well right now. Going to get into a little bit of talk about them and how they're doing currently in the season and what their future holds for them, with Jonathan Isaac playing well, Aaron Gordon being re-signed, Mo Bamba being picked as their draft pick, a lot of that to cover over. And then we're going to talk a little bit about Orlando City and some of what's happened to them over the past season, but that'll be a little touch of it. But getting back to the beginning of what we're talking about, UCF. So the last time that we had the podcast on, I kind of mentioned at the beginning of the 2017 season, we were getting ready to head into fall camp, and we were basically talking about UCF getting ready for the start of the season, and I had mentioned that Mackenzie Milton was back, had a chance to possibly look good. He was going to have some good outside help with receivers like Tre'Quan Smith, a couple of new key extensions like Gabe Davis, Adrian Killens coming in and playing well. And I got to be honest, I didn't think at the beginning of that 2017 season that UCF would go on the run that they did, but I gotta say, they surprised all of us. Not only did Mackenzie Milton have a Heisman-worthy season, but Tre'Quan Smith showed up, played extremely well for the Knights, as was evidenced by the fact that he became a high draft pick for the New Orleans Saints at wide receiver and has been playing very well for the Saints this year at wide receiver. Gabe Davis played well. Tre'Quan Nelson emerged out of nowhere and became a sensational receiver for the UCF Knights. Adrian Killens was an amazing halfback last year. Otis Anderson came onto the scene with his ability to play running back as well as wide receiver, to be a diverse kind of flex option for the Knights that really helped them out. Taj McGowan was a big back, although last year in the 2017 season, he was hurt for a good bit of it, so didn't get to make as much of an impact as he has this year, or as much as he would have liked to last year, but still a key part of that UCF offense for sure. The offensive line did their thing with Aaron Evans and Wyatt Miller holding down the fort for that offensive line and giving McKenzie a good line to throw behind. The guys like Adrian Killens and Otis Anderson, a great line to run behind. They were doing their side. And obviously, we cannot forget the defensive side of the ball last year. Obviously, Shaquem Griffin being the focal point of that UCF defense last year, being the main leader of the team along with Mackenzie Milton, being really the soul of the team and the defense as well. Jaquan Burkett had a huge year for the Knights last year before we even get into the Peach Bowl and the amazingness that that was. Just a strong defensive presence by him. Trey Neal was a big part of the defense last year, obviously transferring to Nebraska this year, but made some key plays last year for the Knights. And of course, we had Mike Hughes being one of the biggest keys of that defense last year, and he showed it with the fact that he became a first-round draft pick for the Minnesota Vikings and was playing very well in the NFL this year, right up until he had his ACL tear and went out for the season. But that defense, while it kind of, some might say, wavered, quote-unquote, down the stretch, playing against the teams such as USF and Memphis late in the season, they had a strong showing. And I think it's especially easier looking back now, not only just after a few weeks, but after a whole year now, essentially, looking back on those games, it was easy to say that defense was really worn down by the time they got to USF and Memphis, and they were going up against two of the more powerhouse offenses, not just in the American last year, but in the entire country. When you look at the fact that USF had Quentin Flowers at quarterback, who was a very, very good quarterback and a very strong system for Quentin Flowers, that had played very well throughout his career at USF, with a couple of other key components to that USF offense that really helped to make it run, that made it a tough defense for UCF to play against. And then the fact of Memphis having Anthony Miller at wide receiver that they had to play against, going against a fairly good quarterback as well. It was tough opponents for that UCF defense to have to play against. And I think the biggest thing that a lot of people were forgetting around the time that those games were occurring, UCF was going on 11 straight weeks of playing football with no bye week in between there. And that was a big significance for that UCF defense. With the hurricane affecting their bye weeks and them having to schedule an extra game against Austin Peay just to reach 12 regular season games. While Austin Peay was not a big time opponent, real tough, although some people even say the UCF defense kind of struggled in that game as well. Offense certainly did not have a hard time in that one. It really wore down on that UCF defense because 11 straight weeks without a bye week in there to let bodies heal, let injuries recover, just to give the defense a chance to breathe and recharge their batteries and get reset for the rest of that season. It really kind of took a toll. And I think, as we saw with this year's UCF team, the defense might have wavered, might have been a little suspect at the beginning of the year, but they had that bye week to kind of readjust, reevaluate, recharge those batteries, fix any injuries that they might have had. And they have really come out well. The few couple of games before the Cincinnati game this year, the defense was starting to look better, starting to get their tackles down a little bit better, but some might say that they were still a little here and there with their defense. But I think it was really that Cincinnati game where the defense for UCF this year really stepped up and showed up big time and made a key impact on the season. But going back to last year's UCF team and that remarkable run that UCF went on, the first couple of games they play, and then they get the hurricane that comes through Irma and it cancels their home game against Georgia Tech. A lot of people were upset about that. A lot of pundits really thought that that was the game last year that if UCF was really going to show what kind of team they were, that was the team they were going to do it against, a Power 5 ACC opponent that many had thought going into last year was going to have a strong showing in the conference. That game gets canceled. After that, UCF then goes on the road against Maryland and puts up a pretty strong, impressive performance on the road against the Maryland team that had actually gone on the road and beaten a Texas team that many thought were going to have it be their comeback year last year, with Tom Herman being the new hire, with Texas getting lots of good recruits coming in. There was a new energy surrounding the program, and many thought that last year was going to be Texas's year to shine. Maryland shuts it down quickly with the early road win against Texas, and UCF goes on the road and beats that same Maryland team pretty soundingly in a good win on the road against a Power 5 Big Ten opponent. And really from there just kind of goes through the rest of their schedule. Beat Memphis early in the season 40-13. Has a pretty convincing win over Cincinnati as well in the season. That one gets stopped early by a thunderstorm and gets basically called off early as UCF had a convincing go around there. They would go on to win some pretty big games as well against Austin Peay, as mentioned beforehand. UConn was a pretty convincing win. ECU, pretty strong win for UCF as well. And then they went into that USF game. And for those of you that may not remember, it was a pretty big game going into that week. UCF was undefeated up to that point. USF was also undefeated going up to that point. And pretty much the winner of that game, well, not pretty much, the winner of that game was going to represent the Eastern Division of the American Athletic Conference in the championship game. So there was a lot riding on the line for the Knights. Perfect season, another opportunity to go to a conference championship game, and the potential for a New Year's Six Bowl. What many were hoping at the time would be a potential for a playoff berth on the line. And UCF entered into a dogfight with USF. It was a very back and forth game straight from the beginning. But Mike Hughes, again, as we mentioned, all of the big time personnel that was on that UCF roster last year, Mike Hughes makes the play right towards the end of the game, takes the kickoff back for the touchdown into the end zone for the Knights. The Knights take the late lead with, I don't have it in front of me, but I believe if I remember correctly, is about a minute 18 or so, a little over a minute for sure left on the clock. USF gets the ball. They actually started driving down the field and looked like they were going to march down and score the ball again when Quentin Flowers threw a pass out to Wilcox, the tight end for USF. He gets it out on the edge, tries to turn up the field and make a play. Shaquem Griffin comes in behind him, punches the ball out from Wilcox's arm, causes the fumble. UCF recovers it and ends up winning the game late in a huge, thrilling fashion in that War on I-4 game, which ended up being on ABC and actually had one of the highest viewerships of any game last year, especially any of the games that were during that quote-unquote rivalry week that always ends up right around that Thanksgiving time. It was one of the most watched games of the season and one of the most memorable games of the season last year as well, for sure. The very next week, UCF plays at home again against the Memphis in the American Athletic Conference Championship. And again, they would get into another dogfight with Memphis that would end up being another back and forth game. It eventually would end up going into overtime, where Memphis would score first On the Knights, it would take a Mackenzie Milton option to Adrian Killens into the corner of the end zone to tie it up. The very next overtime and double overtime, UCF gets the ball first. They drive down, and Otis Anderson punches it in from about 2 yards out to score the touchdown. UCF goes up. Then Memphis would come back on the next possession, get it to third down, and on a blitz by Shaquem Griffin, Memphis throws the ball up in the air in an errant pass. Trey Neal comes away with the interception, and that would be the ball game as UCF won that one at double overtime over Memphis, clinching their fifth conference championship, their third one in the American Athletic Conference. And that would lead them to go to the Chick-fil-A Peach Bowl on New Year's Day. They played Auburn in the Peach Bowl. It was a huge, significant game. Lots of implications for the Knights there. They were the only undefeated team in the regular season that year. And Auburn had beaten number one Alabama, who had only had one loss, which was to Auburn. And they had played Georgia earlier in the year and gave Georgia what was at that time their only loss as well. And as we all know, Alabama and Georgia end up playing each other in the CFP National Championship a week later in Atlanta in Mercedes-Benz Stadium as well. But this Auburn team last year was a strong team. They had a lot of weapons on their team that really could have caused problems for UCF. Kerryon Johnson at halfback. He didn't end up playing much in that Peach Bowl game. He was coming off of an injury, but he still played some significant time and had some significant plays. Jared Stidham in at quarterback. He had also finished pretty high in postseason awards last year. He was one of the finalists, if I believe correctly, for either the I want to say it was the Archie Manning Award. I could be wrong on that, but he was one of the more highly touted quarterbacks at the end of last season. A lot of analysts, a lot of announcers were writing off UCF going into this game. We all know the story. Everyone had them out. UCF comes out, has a rather shaky first half, especially the first quarter. Auburn gets out to the early lead. Things look a little bit weary for the Knights. Mackenzie Milton wasn't really connecting on of his passes in that first half there, but he uses his legs to move the offense down the field. All of a sudden, things start to open up for the Knights. They score the touchdown, go up, and from there, UCF would kind of dictate the play of that game. At halftime, UCF was leading that game. Auburn would take the lead pretty early in the third quarter, right after halftime. And it kind of looked like if there was an opportunity where Auburn was going to show its might and pull away from the Knights in this game, that this was their opportunity to do it. But UCF, again, the offense started opening up, passes started connecting and being completed, and they were moving down the field. And sure enough, UCF gets the lead back, gets some very good turnovers throughout the game. The one fumble by Stidham early on in the first half, pick six by Shaquan Burkett in the third quarter. It was a huge opportunity for the Knights. Made some good plays for them, and they were able to recover from that and really take the lead at that point in the game. And never looked back after that. Auburn had a late drive, scored a touchdown to bring it to within seven, and had another late drive with the opportunity to possibly tie the game. Shaquem Griffin again comes up huge, brings in the blitz, Stidham throws a high ball in the air again, and Antoine Collier was in the back of the end zone to pick off the interception and seal that perfect season for the Knights. They go undefeated, 13-0, American Athletic Conference champions, Peach Bowl champions, some like myself would say national champions. Another story for another time on this podcast that we'll get into, especially with the way that things are looking again this year. That debate might need to be brought up, but again, another podcast for another time. And we get into this year, with everything that happened. Scott Frost takes the coaching job at Nebraska, leaves the team. And one last thing about last year's team that really kind of, comes to my mind now, especially as I bring up Scott Frost leaving that team last year, and I'll get into it some in a minute because this year's team has faced it as well. But last year's team went through so many adversities and obstacles when it comes to the hurricane, Scott Frost leaving, and so many other things that we'll get to in a minute as well. It was just unbelievable for the team to rally together and do that. But moving forward to this year as well, Scott Frost leaves to go to Nebraska. Josh Heupel comes in and gets hired as the new coach. And everyone was kind of up in the air about how this year would be. We knew that for the most part, most of last year's team was going to stay intact, but with a new coach, new system, a lot of key guys in certain positions gone, you never know exactly how it's going to end up. Much of the optimism was that the team had a chance to go undefeated again this year, looking at the strength of the team, at their schedule and who they were playing, and what was kind of going on around. But you never quite know, especially when you add in the fact of, as we said before, a new coach and a new system. But the Knights were able to not disappoint this year, as they've gone 12-0 again. The very first game of the season at UConn, an absolute rout of the Huskies. The Knights score offensively on their first on six out of their first seven offensive drives of the game. Was completely dismantled that UConn Huskies team, and then right after that, just kept on moving through their schedule. A lot of people early on in the season were saying that a tough test and matchup for them was going to be against FAU. Lane Kiffin, the Lane Train coming in. Devin Singletary, a solid running back for the FAU Owls, might give UCF a hard time. And while he did have a fantastic running game against the Knights and against their defense early on in the season, the Knights were still able to take care of business and handle FAU in the way that they needed to. Came away with a big win there. Of course, for those of you that follow UCF and know about it, the North Carolina game early in the season gets canceled due to a hurricane. So 2 years in a row now that we've had the whole hurricane obstacle come and affect the team in a way. But UCF able to not miss a beat at all with it. They jump right back onto the bandwagon. They're able to keep on moving and just win across their schedule. One of their toughest matchups, probably throughout this season, had to have been against the Memphis game in the middle of the season. They travel on the road to Memphis. They were down for a good majority of that game and down pretty convincingly to Memphis. It almost kind of reminded me of the Louisville game back in 2013 when UCF goes on the road to face Louisville and was down for a majority of that game by a lot of points. Louisville just kept on piling the scores, made it almost seem like it was a improbable uphill battle to climb for the Knights, which is kind of the feeling that you were getting from this Memphis game as well, even though the score margin wasn't quite as big of a gap in this Memphis game as that Louisville game back in 2013. But it definitely had that feel where the crowd was into the game. Memphis was feeling it. They were confident. They were scoring what presumably seemed at will at the time. UCF's defense had no answer to stop Memphis at least in the first half. And it seemed like a very hard uphill battle for UCF to come out of. The second half, UCF defense holds Memphis to 0 points, kept Memphis at a goose egg for that second half. The UCF offense comes out. Definitely was not the best performance by any means, but they showed some grit and really dug in when they needed to. There were some key fourth down plays, fourth and ones, fourth and twos, where you got to give Josh Heupel credit. He went with the gutsy call and went for it on those fourth and ones, fourth and twos, when if UCF did not convert on those plays, they were going to be putting themselves and the defense in really, really tough field position and a hard place to have to recover from. And they make some good plays. Greg McCrae busts the run on UCF's jumbo set with Tristan Hill in at fullback. Greg McCrae busts a run against Memphis for the touchdown. They convert another fourth down play where they were able to keep the drive moving. And in bad, awful conditions, too, where it was raining for a good portion of the game, the field and the ball were slippery, not ideal for passing. Definitely hard to even run the ball in those kinds of conditions. UCF found a way to come back and win by a point. Another key game that you definitely have to pick out down the season as well as you go. The ECU game on the road, Mackenzie Milton was not injured enough to be officially ruled out, but the coaches decided that they did not want to play Mackenzie if they did not have to. They start Darryl Mack in the game. He is a little bit of a rough go the first couple of drives in that game, and it looked like ECU was just continuing to get momentum as the game pushed further and further along. Finally, UCF's offense breaks through with a trick play on a halfback pass for a touchdown, and after that, the offense just opened up for UCF. The defense certainly stepped up and made some big plays in that game, and UCF ends up cruising on to a pretty big win in front of ECU. Obviously, the other game, as you trickle on down the line, one game that wasn't very quote unquote big as far as the football field that you could say, but was definitely one of my favorites as far as attending games, the Navy game. It was homecoming, so definitely big time, and that, a lot of alumni were coming back for the homecoming game. Obviously, all the pageantry that goes on with the homecoming game and the hoopla, but definitely the fact of just watching Navy. Their fans were absolutely fantastic, very respectful, very great and dedicated fan base. I very much enjoyed talking to all those fans. Obviously, at the end of the game, getting to hear the Navy alma mater and watching UCF's football team go over and stand with Navy's football team while the Navy alma mater was being played, and then the return favor of the Navy band doing the same for UCF's alma mater. Definitely a great showing by Navy. Obviously, the biggest game that I think most people kind of comes to mind for them as far as UCF fans in this season, the Cincinnati game. We had ESPN's College Game Day on campus. Definitely an amazing time. The turnout for College Game Day was absolutely phenomenal. The buzz around campus and just the entire Orlando community for that whole week was off of the charts, as everything that everyone could talk about that week had to do with College Game Day and the crew being on campus for the first time ever. The atmosphere was electric, and the atmosphere for the game was absolutely electric as it earned the prime time slot on ABC. Kirk Herbstreit and Brad Nessler doing the call for that one, and absolutely nailed it. Great time, great atmosphere. The crowd, you could tell, especially from the start of the game, was a factor in it as Cincinnati starts off the game with the ball and starts their first two plays with a delay of game and then a false start. Undoubtedly, both caused by the crowd atmosphere. Excuse me. And, sometimes when you record these podcasts, you can't expect for everything to happen. So, get a little bit of hiccups here and there. But, anyways, moving forward, going into the Cincinnati game, just an incredible, incredible showing by the Knights in the prime time slot. Defense plays a huge, huge game in that one. Mackenzie Milton and the offense show up and show out for that game as well and have a big time. And then this past week, we had the War on I-4 game against USF, a heated rivalry game. Obviously, ever since that game, the big factor that everyone has been talking about, Mackenzie Milton's injury. Unless you live under a rock now or just don't really follow sports that well, most of you know that Mackenzie Milton goes out early in the second quarter with the knee injury. What it seems to be, from all reports that I've seen, as a dislocated knee. He also had a ruptured artery, was rushed to the hospital, had his artery repaired, and is now intact. He's going to have his knee reconstructed at a later date. A costly injury for the Knights, to say the least. They still find a way to rally around the fact Daryl Mack goes out, plays a fantastic game against USF. The defense steps up and made some key plays in that game to keep UCF where they were at, and they come away with the victory against USF, keeping another perfect regular season intact at 12-0. And now they go against Memphis in the American Athletic Conference Championship for the second time in 2 years now. It'll be a rematch of UCF and Memphis in that conference championship game. It'll be the fourth time that UCF has played Memphis in the last 14 months, which is a lot of times to have to play the same team over and over again in rematches. And one thing that I can definitely say as we look forward to this upcoming game, it's going to be a tough game for a couple of key reasons. I mean, you look back at the game earlier in the season, Memphis's run game was able to move pretty much with ease. UCF had a hard time containing it, at least until the second half. The good factor that UCF will have, I think, in this game, it's a home game. The crowd will be an enormous factor as they'll bring the energy as they have all season long. The fact that the team and the UCF community are rallying around Mackenzie Milton, trying to get this win for him to close out not just another perfect season, but another conference championship to add to UCF will be a huge factor for them. But make no mistake, this will be a tough game, even with all those factors combined. I think Daryl Mack, if you haven't gotten a chance to watch him in any of the games this year, just in any footage from high school leading up to this game, he's a very capable quarterback. He definitely has all the intangibles that you're looking for. He's got a very good arm, very good legs. He can run the ball very well. Does a great job of scrambling when he's under pressure. But I think one of my favorite things that I like about Daryl Mack, he's a very good decision maker. He doesn't throw or force the ball into unnecessary windows or unnecessary situations. He doesn't really make bad plays at all. He's very smart about handling the ball. And I think that is a factor that will definitely help UCF going into the game against Memphis. I try not to make predictions on these types of games. I don't want to jinx the team, but I definitely think that we're going to have a good game on hand for us Saturday, December 1st at 3:30 between UCF and Memphis. This is really what's starting to become somewhat of a rivalry between these two teams. As I said, fourth meeting between the two in the last 14 months. UCF has had the advantage in this matchup, winning 12 of the last 13 matchups on a 12-game win streak, if I'm correct with that, and the last time Memphis winning in 1990. So it's been a while since Memphis has gotten a win in this series. Hopefully UCF can extend that for another win and get another American Athletic Conference championship. It would be their sixth conference championship for the Knights, and if I remember correctly, it would be their fourth conference championship in the last 6 years. It would definitely be their second conference championship in a row, back to backs there, and it would be their third conference championship in the last 5 years, I believe, as UCF shared a portion of the conference championship back in 2014. So definitely a lot to look forward to for the Knights here. Moving into this week with the other matchups on hand, we have Oklahoma against Texas in the Red River Rivalry Part 2 this season. Texas came away with the win earlier in the season, giving Oklahoma their only loss on the season with a late field goal in that game. That will definitely be a tough matchup as well. A lot of the big time announcers have Oklahoma outrightly winning this game. I'm not buying it. I think when you look at the fact that this is a hard rivalry between two teams that don't really like each other, that it's been a rivalry for a long time, you can't ever count those types of rivalries out. And also the fact that it's two storied teams, and you look at Texas is trying to get back to where they used to be. They're trying to make a name for themselves again. Tom Herman has an absolute golden chance here to really put Texas back on the map. Now, they haven't had a fantastic season this year. They lost to Maryland again. Even though they beat Oklahoma earlier in the season, they lost some other games that they probably should have won against other teams. But if they can cap their season, pardon me, if they can cap their season with a big time win against Oklahoma in the Big 12 Conference Championship and win that conference championship, it would be a huge exclamation point on the end of the season for Tom Herman and the Longhorns, and it would definitely derail what would hope to be a playoff bid for the Oklahoma Sooners, as they're sitting right now in the fifth spot with only one loss, just behind the Georgia Bulldogs. Speaking of Georgia, we also have the SEC Championship match on tap on Saturday, December 1st. Going to be between the Georgia Bulldogs and the Alabama Crimson Tide. If the Bulldogs could pull off the upset, it would give the Tide the first loss of the season. And if Bama goes in and wins, Georgia falls to a two-loss team. I think for most UCF fans out here, as much as it's gonna pain us to say it, we're really kind of looking for Georgia to lose this game and Alabama to win. As much as those words kind of sting coming out of your mouth, really looking for Alabama to win this game. If Georgia loses, Oklahoma loses, it definitely opens up some spots ahead of us to be able to move up. Whether the committee decides to do that or not, totally different story. But at least if those two teams fall out, the possibility is there, and you get some chaos moving ahead of you, then you need to help yourself out in that kind of conversation. The other factor that has to happen, that will be a big determination on Saturday, December 1st, is going to be the Big Ten Conference Championship game taking place in Indianapolis between the Ohio State Buckeyes and Northwestern Wildcats. Ohio State coming off of a big win against Michigan last week. One of their first games all season where they've actually looked, at least since the third or fourth week of the season, where they've looked like a team that I don't want to say looks complete, although they looked pretty complete against Michigan, but definitely had a strong performance against a team. They were able to score virtually at will against the Michigan defense. They were able to hold that Michigan offense at bay for the most part, and definitely showed up for one of the first times all season, especially since losing to Purdue by 29 earlier in the season. After that, they had had a couple games, mainly against Maryland and Nebraska, where last-minute oddities kind of saved the Buckeyes and saved their season. So this is another one where most of the odds makers, most of the announcers and all are going to have the Buckeyes winning out this game. I don't necessarily buy into that. I think while Northwestern is not a very strong team, they've kept it close with a lot of teams this year. They ended up beating Wisconsin, and I know Wisconsin is not as strong as of a team this year as they were last year, but that's still a Wisconsin that was favored to win the West Division of the Big Ten that they were able to beat out. They kept it close with Notre Dame for a majority of that game until Ian Book finally made a couple of key plays towards the end of that game to let the Irish pull away. So they were able to win, well, excuse me, not win, but keep it close for a lot of games. So this is the Northwestern group that's going to be looking to make a statement against a Ohio State team that frankly has looked pretty suspect throughout this whole season and definitely has some flaws that have been seen by many this year. If Georgia, Oklahoma, and Ohio State can all wind up with losses by the end of tomorrow, and if UCF, I think, doesn't even have to necessarily win in convincing fashion, but if they can at least win the game tomorrow, and especially if they can win in convincing fashion, then that helps their case for the committee. Again, whether the committee decides to reward UCF with that or put them in, totally different story for another podcast again, but one can only hope. The other game that will be on tap tomorrow will be the ACC championship game, which will be between the Clemson Tigers and the Pitt Panthers. UCF winning earlier this year against Pitt at home 45-14, pretty much controlled that game against Pitt from the snap and really dominated this Pitt team that has honestly looked very well ever since that loss to UCF. The only other game where they've kind of looked a little shaky was the last game of the season playing Miami. Miami was able to avenge the loss that Pitt gave them last year when Miami was looking for a college football playoff berth. But Pitt has been looking pretty good down the stretch and definitely has a chance to do their thing. If they can come away with a win against Clemson, it won't be easy, but it would definitely be a shocker. So we'll see what happens in the college football world tomorrow. definitely see if UCF can pull off the win against Memphis and what'll happen in some of the other games. Really looking forward to it and coming back to the podcast and breaking down what happened and what we can look forward to for UCF moving forward. But regardless, either way, you have to congratulate, as we've done a recap of UCF here. Got to congratulate them on what they've been able to do the last 2 years, going 13-0 last year, 12-0 so far this year, with a chance to recap it off. And we'll leave it at that for UCF. I'll give you a little bit of an ad break here. Got to get our sponsorships in. We'll come back and talk about what the Magic have done so far this year. You're listening to the Orlando Overtime Podcast. And welcome back into the Orlando Overtime Podcast. We're going to go ahead and start on with segment two of today's podcast, talking about the Orlando Magic, some of the offseason moves that they made, and how well that they've been playing so far this year. To begin with, the Magic didn't really do a whole lot in the offseason. They don't extend Mario Hezonja. He gets picked up by the New York Knicks and moves on from the Magic. They pick up a small key positions here and there with Jerian Grant. Jamel Artis was an acquisition during the offseason that the Magic made. Their biggest offseason move coming during the draft, when they acquired Mo Bamba out of Texas to play at the center position for them. A very high draft pick with a lot of stock potential for the Magic. Got a lot of spirits high here in Orlando, with the potential for the quote-unquote big lineup to come into place. That's the Bamba, Isaac, and Gordon lineup. We haven't seen a whole lot of it this year, but from what we have seen of that lineup in the few key moments that the Magic have used this lineup, early returns are looking very well, especially defensively for this lineup. Mo Bamba as a pick was excellent for the Magic, especially when it comes to the defensive end of the floor. They're adding a lot of length, a lot of height, a lot of defensive prowess by picking up Mo Bamba. It adds, right now, at least while Nick Vucevic is with the team, for sure, a lot of depth to the Magic by having Vooch in the starting position. Mo Bamba has been coming off of the bench, a very big time player, as I said, with a lot of length and a lot of height and athleticism at that position. It has really kind of bolstered the Magic in the backcourt, which is something that they definitely have needed the last couple of years for sure. Jonathan Isaac didn't get to play very much last year, sitting out most of the year with an ankle injury. He did have a little bit of an injury bug fairly earlier in the year, but in the games that he has played, which is a good majority of them so far this year, he has looked very, very strong for the Orlando Magic. He's definitely coming into his own. He's gotten a lot more confident with his jump shot, a lot more confident with his outside game. His defense has been very, very solid. Played an extremely sound defensive game against LeBron James a week or so ago. It might have been 2 weeks ago, against the Lakers when the Magic were in LA on their West Coast road trip. Played fairly well for the most part against Kevin Durant. There were some times that he could have played better, but again, it's Kevin Durant, one of the best players, if not the best player, at least in my opinion. Again, another podcast for another day, but hands down, one of the best players in the league. Did about as much as you could against him defensively, but he's been playing very solid. Can't say enough about Nikola Vucevic so far this year, putting up all-star caliber numbers. Been averaging over 20 points a game, been averaging around 11 rebounds a game. Just absolutely ridiculous numbers, playing very well. Aaron Gordon has been putting up strong numbers earlier in the season on the offensive side of the ball. There were some moments in some games where he looked to be the Aaron Gordon of last year, where he might have felt like a lot of the offense and a lot of what was going on in the team had to kind of go through him, and he was putting a little bit of pressure on himself to kind of force shots, force things to happen on the offensive side of the ball for him, really trying to push the situation and the narrative. And I think the last couple of games, Aaron has done a very nice job of sitting back, letting the game come to him, letting the game really kind of flow as he needs it to be able to work well for him. And one of the key words that I've heard about Aaron Gordon from others that I really want to stress as well, I think fits the narrative for him right now and the way that he is playing for this Orlando Magic team, is he's been efficient. Not only efficient on the offensive side and not trying to force things with the ball, not trying to force shots and trying to force the situation and what's going on, but he's been very efficient as well on the defensive side of the ball, playing lockdown defense on some guys. The game against Golden State, we already mentioned Jonathan Isaac played Kevin Durant well. Aaron Gordon had to leave the game early with some back tightness and back soreness in the third quarter, but up until he left the game during that part of it, he was playing some lockdown defense against, well, lockdown as best you can again against Kevin Durant in that game, and it pretty well held Kevin Durant to about only 13 points at that point in the game, which is a very major accomplishment when you're talking about Kevin Durant, one of the best pure scorers in the NBA. So Aaron Gordon has been doing his part in this team to make this machine roll. Terrence Ross is absolutely killing it in the sixth man spot. Definitely has to be one of the early front runners for the sixth man of the year award. He has been a major contribution coming off of the bench for the Magic, scoring massive amounts of points. I think he's very comfortable in that role, as many like Scott Inez and Nikki Football from ESPN 580 Orlando, locally here in Orlando, have mentioned. He's been doing his job as a scorer coming off of the bench, knowing that his main role for this Magic team is to get points and get buckets, and he's been very, very good at doing that exact thing. Jonathan Simmons has been playing well, not nearly as good as some people might have want him to play. I think he's been doing his job very well in the position that he has been put in on the team right now, definitely contributing off of the bench for sure for this Magic team. The bench has been getting points. Mo Bamba is coming into his own. He's had some nights where he hasn't exactly looked like a top 10 pick in the NBA out there, but he is a rookie, and I think sometimes we're letting the fact of where he was picked in the draft, his potential, definitely his stock that he has right now, getting the best of our judgments, and remembering the fact that he is still a rookie. We are only about 20, just under 25 games into the season right now. It's still very early, and he's still trying to get used to the pace and the tempo of the NBA, totally different than the college game. And he's still a small guy, you know. He's very lanky. He's still got a work up a build on him. Got to get some muscle to him to be able to bang down low with some of the other guys in the NBA that have bigger bodies, to be able to compete on the block, not only to get rebounds, but to work the post game and do all the small little things that it takes a very good center in the NBA to accomplish. So I think you give Mo Bamba a little bit of time. He'll start to work more into his own. But so far, definitely like what I see on the good nights that Mo Bamba has coming into the season right now. The Magic are playing at a very high level, and Steve Clifford has them playing at that very high level. Clifford is not taking any excuses for the team this year. He's not taking moral victories. He said on multiple occasions that he doesn't really want to take moral victories this year, as the team and some of the other coaches have in the past. He believes his team has moved on from it. I believe that the team needs to move on from it if they want to turn that corner after these last 6 years and to be able to compete for a playoff spot, which is what they're doing right now with the record that they're at. You look at record-wise, standings-wise, where they are in the Eastern Conference right now, holding on to that 8th seed. The teams that are below them, you have Washington, Miami, Brooklyn, all right behind the Atlanta, all right behind the Magic right now. Early on, the way the Wizards are playing, the fact that John Wall and Bradley Beal have not really stepped up to their potential that they have. Dwight Howard, now with a back surgery, going to be out 2 to 3 months for this Wizards team. They haven't really meshed and gotten that chemistry that you figured they might have this year. So a Wizards team that's definitely struggling early on in the gate. A Heat team that can be hot 1 minute, pun intended there, cold the next minute, very up and down team. Still haven't really found their way early on in the season. Brooklyn is trying to band together what they can and muster as many wins. And we know Atlanta was a lottery team this past season with the Magic. They pick up Trae Young in the draft. They've acquired some other pieces, and they're not looking too bad for the team that they are. But nobody really figured that they were really going to be playoff contenders this season. Anyways, you look at the teams that are directly in front of the Magic. You have Boston sitting at 7. You definitely have to figure at some point they're going to get their chemistry together. They're going to figure out how to implement Kyrie and Gordon Hayward into that lineup that was so dominant last year and pushed Cleveland to 7 games in the Eastern Conference Finals. They're going to find a way to be that Boston team that goes out and plays well every single night. They just haven't found it yet. Charlotte sitting just above the Magic right now in the 5th seed. You also have Indiana's in the mix right now, although they might be going through a little bit of a slump with Victor Oladipo out what seems for a good significant amount of time right now with his knee injury. Detroit is playing well. Toronto is at the top of the East right now. Milwaukee playing good, but Orlando, with the way that they are playing right now, with the way that this team is meshing, the way that they are passing the ball, the ball movement on offense looks fantastic. The shooting is very, very well right now, although many would imagine that the shooting percentages for the team as a whole and for a good amount of the individuals on the team probably aren't going to stay at the numbers that they are at right now for the entire season. But if guys can go on hot streaks at different times of the year, you've got to think that the way that this Magic team is playing defense right now and the way that they are distributing the ball to the guys that are having hot moments, that are having good games, that are on streaks right now, they're looking very solid. And it's going to be hard to keep this Magic team the way that they are talking about right now out of playoff talks and out of playoff contention as the year continues to roll along if they continue this play this way. Again, just under 25 games in the season, still very early on, but if you're a Magic fan, you got to like what you're seeing right now from this Magic team, moral victories or not. Yes, there are games that we've had throughout the season that the Magic could have won. You look at the Golden State game a couple of nights ago. You lose that game by about 4 points in the last few minutes as Kevin Durant and Klay Thompson really flex their all-star muscles and show why they are not only one of the best teams in the NBA, but two of the best players in the NBA by far. The Magic go to Portland and lose that game by three. A couple of weeks ago, we have Toronto here at the Amway Center in Orlando play a very tough, hard-fought game against Toronto all the way down to the wire. And if it isn't for Danny Green, at the last closing seconds, I mean, literally the last second of the game, hitting a jump shot at the buzzer to basically win the game for Toronto by 2 points. You have that game in the bag. So you're talking about three of the top teams in the NBA right now that the Magic have gone toe to toe with, competed with very hard. And some of these games, maybe the Golden State game, you don't say that Orlando should have won that game with the fact that Kevin Durant and Klay Thompson can control a game like they can, but they definitely have an opportunity to win that game at least. The Portland game and Toronto game, you maybe feel like Orlando should have won those games, but they're playing games tight right now against some of the top competition in the NBA, and you have to feel like if they can continue to play this way throughout the stretch of the season, they're going to be a dangerous team come towards the end of the season. They're only going to get better if they can stay healthy this year. That's going to be one of the key factors that really hurt them last year, with Jonathan Isaac missing a good majority of the season, Terrence Ross missing more than half of the season, Aaron Gordon out for a significant amount of time, Nikola Vucevic was out for good chunks of the season last year, Evan Fournier missed portions of the season. So if the Magic can find a way to stay healthy, stay injury free, and continue this type of play that they've had throughout the season, you likely have to think that at some point later on this year, we're going to be talking about a playoff opportunity, playoff berth, and the end of the playoff drought for the Magic after 6 seasons finally. So, a lot of optimism going on in Orlando sports right now as UCF continues their 12-0 win streak this year, trying to make it 25-0 with a win against Memphis on Saturday. Orlando looking good right now, staying in the 8th seed in the Eastern Conference through the first 23 or so games of the season, and a very good spot for the team playing well. And I said at the beginning of the podcast that we would touch just ever so lightly on Orlando City, and I will right here just for the next couple of minutes. This past season, a lot of optimism coming for Orlando City with Dom Dwyer's first full year in Orlando. They start off the year very well, finish the first game of the season with a draw against DC United. After that, they would go on a 6-match win streak in the MLS, looked like one of the hottest teams in the MLS. They had caught fire. It seemed like nobody was going to be able to beat them for a while. Their offense was on a hum. Everything was going right for the Lions. They were poised to be sitting atop of the Eastern Conference come the middle and the end of the season. And then after that, Orlando could not muster up a win from June on forward. There was a good stretch for about a month or a little over a month there where Orlando City could not even score a goal in a game. Their offense just completely fell apart. They could not find their scoring side, and it really just looked like a very depressing Orlando City team to watch. Most of the fans tuned out from their games, and we found out about a week or so ago that Orlando City decides to make lots of roster cuts. In a future episode of the podcast, we'll go over more in detail about the roster cuts that Orlando City went into. The biggest one of those that you have to talk about, not the roster on the pitch necessarily, but the fact that Orlando City cuts their GM And they'll be moving forward with a new GM, hopefully that can retool this roster to one that might have a little bit more potential for the next season for Orlando City. But that will wrap it up for the Orlando Overtime podcast for episode 3. You've been listening. Thank you for joining in. My name is Jonathan Treadway, the host. You can find me on Twitter at JTMagic1989. That's the letters JT Magic, like the team, 1989 on Twitter. If you have a question for the podcast, you can ask me on there. You can also look for my profile on Anchor, which is the podcast tool that I use to host and record these podcasts. You can send me a question directly on the page there, and it'll actually get straight uploaded into the podcast to be able to answer. If you would like to listen to the podcast on another platform other than the one that you're listening to, it'll be available on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, any of the major podcasting services that you use. Also, if you want to share it with your friends, go send them there to those places. And as always, I hope you subscribe to my podcast, like it in any kind of way that you can, share it with your friends. And if you like to, again, be mentioned or have a question on the podcast, make sure to send those in. Until next time, thank you for listening to the Orlando Overtime Podcast. How do you know, man? How do you know, man? How do you know, man?